up? Welcome back to Spin Rate, the Athletic Blue Jays podcast. My name is Drew Fairservice, and we are here talking about your slumping, mediocre, injured Toronto Blue Jays. They're all of the above. And this is the Sunday episode of this show in which we kind of go over what's been going on the last couple days, the last week, look ahead, really like get into the meat and potatoes of what is going on with your Toronto Blue Jays. And I can't do that alone. There is no better person to talk about meat and potatoes, even though they do not ingest meat anymore, as we were talking about before we started to record. She covers the Blue Jays for The Athletic, co-host Caitlin McGrath. Caitlin, thank you so much for taking the time to join us as you do every Sunday.
Thanks for having me again.
You're not a guest. This is your show.
Yeah.
I don't need to thank you for coming. This is your job now.
Thanks for showing up for your job.
Thanks for doing the thing that you agreed in writing to do with your boss.
Yes.
So, your Toronto Blue Jays, well, they're not your Toronto Blue Jays, they're the Toronto Blue Jays. It's a bit of a rough weekend, losing 3 of 4 to Kansas City. Although there was one of those games was rained out, so it was 2 7-inning games. But lots to unpack about your Toronto Blue Jays. They had a decent start to the week, winning 2 of 3 from the slumping, terrible, disgraceful, should be relegated from the league, Yankees. But I think, you know, at the front of our mind, maybe the thing we want to talk about off the top is maybe let's start with something that's a bit more positive. And now I don't know that I would necessarily say that today's Robbie Ray start was a positive one. It was definitely like the full and complete Robbie Ray experience. But what I think it is, and the reason I want to start there is, while it wasn't a great start, the Blue Jays starting pitching and the pitching in general, despite being ravaged with injuries, despite not necessarily matching up in the most 2021 fashion, they've done pretty well. The starting pitching has been pretty good. Robbie Ray, for all of his struggles, I think he walked 6 guys here on Sunday, didn't give up any runs. Went through 5 full innings, didn't give up any runs. Struck out, I don't know, 5 or 6 again.
3.
Well, that's only 3. So he looked at like awful at times, but at the same time was able to get what he needed. Didn't really get hit hard at all. It was very much a full Robbie Ray start, coming off his start against the Yankees at the beginning of the week, where similar sort of situation. I think he gave up a home run to Kyle Higashioka, but again, pitched pretty well, which is, you could kind of say that of the entire start of the rotation for most of this time. Would you say that the rotation's been pretty good?
Yeah, like the guys that we thought were going to be mainstays of the rotation have been really good for the Blue Jays. And to some extent, the guys that have filled in have been fine enough. There's been some sort of mediocre starts and less good starts. But that's kind of what you can generally expect when you're asking guys who were supposed to be your depth, you know, 6, 7, 8 starters to fill in your starting rotation. But of course, Steven Matz is off to a really good start to his season. He looks like the Steven Matz of old, where I know he's kind of had an up and down career, but whatever season he was good in, and that was a couple of years ago, you know, he's looked really solid. He looks really confident out there. And I think, I don't know how much we want to put into the change of scenery, but certainly maybe it helped having new voices talking to him and maybe reassuring him and giving him different ways in which he can approach batters. And so, yeah, Steven Matz has been definitely one of the better storylines, I guess, to start the year in terms of pitching. Yeah, you sort of laid it out with Ray. I think a positive with Ray today was especially that it was a scoreless outing. And, you know, in the past with Robbie Ray, he could have let things like 6 walks really spiral for him and let things get really bad. But it looks like he's really kind of strengthened that mental approach for him on the mound, and he was really able to sort of grind through. And even though he knew he didn't have his best stuff, by at least like the 4th or 5th inning, he'd kind of worked out what was going wrong with him. He was talking about how his, you know, delivery wasn't quite feeling totally right. But by the 4th or 5th inning, he sort of figured it out. And yeah, like he just totally grinded through it. And that's something that is good to see, because former Robbie Ray could have let a kind of outing like that really spiral. And obviously, Hunjin Ryu's been great. That's what he needs to be. he's one thing that's really encouraging about Hyunjin Ryu is that he's just off to a really great start. And I think last year he got off to kind of a slower start. And it's just really great to see that there doesn't seem to be early on any sort of impacts of how weird last season was with him, like the shorter season, not really having his regular routine. Like, it really just seems like he's back to like vintage Hyunjin Ryu. And it's also good in a way that the Blue Jays have actually found now two times to get him extra rest. And that's going to be something that they're going to be doing throughout the season as much as they possibly can. He likes pitching with extra rest, and it won't happen every time. Like, he's going to need to pitch on 4 days rest when it has to happen. But certainly if they can manage it, he'll be the guy that prioritizes the extra rest.
I think that you made a good point about Robbie. Like, Robbie Ray and Steven Matz have both pitched well, and Hyunjin Ryu has been sort of he's been what he was assumed to be. I think that while I can say, yeah, the Blue Jays starting rotation's pitched pretty well in that it hasn't been like a complete disaster. Obviously, Tanner Roark had the one like blow up start in Texas, but I'm feeling like also maybe the numbers are a little bit skewed because the Blue Jays have pitched very few innings. Of all the teams to have not like missed a bunch of games due to COVID, they're among the fewest innings pitched by starting rotation. You know, they've been sort of getting away with some TJ Zoik stuff. I mean, Anthony Kay started. I don't know if you were watching that start closely, but I mean, I'm pretty hopeful that Anthony Kay would get another chance to go, because I think he pitched, his line wasn't great, but I think he pitched okay. The Blue Jays defense in Thursday night's game really let him down.
Yeah, and with Kay, you have to keep in mind that it was a tough spot for him to come into, because he had a little bit of notice that he would potentially be starting. And I think he knew he was starting that morning because obviously Ross Stripling couldn't go the day before, and then it pushed TJ Zoik up, and so they needed him. So he had enough time to prepare. It wasn't that, but just understand that like he was coming from the alternate site, and when you're at the alternate site, it's not the equivalent of being at like AAA level. Like, they're playing games, they're playing against each other. And he mentioned also that they were playing against other teams. Like, I think the Rays and the Miami Marlins alternate sites had played them. So they had faced other teams, but it's not the same environment. And so sort of understandable that he might be a little bit rusty, or he might be sort of, kind of had to adjust to that adrenaline rush of actually being in a major league game again. And I thought that as he pitched, he looked better. And I think you're right. Like, he pitched certainly better than his line suggested. And I think he will get another chance, just the way that it has to line up. Like, I think I haven't written it down yet and figured it all out. And like, I always have to write all this stuff down because I can't conceptualize it in my brain. I have to have like a calendar, and I have to put the paper, and I have to like count out the days and figure it out. But anyway, I think with the starting situation and the number of days off they have, they can configure it such that really the bulk of the starts will be with the three, Matz, Hyunjin Ryu, and Ray. And then they really have to just plug in a start here or there, which would be like a bullpen day or a K day. I would think, and I asked Charlie this today after the game on Sunday, and I asked if K would be an option for Wednesday in Boston, and he said he would be an option. So
to me, it's crazy. To me, it's crazy that it's an option. I got all kinds of time for Anthony Kay. I thought he looked pretty good. He's a guy that might struggle with his command sometimes. I didn't think when I was watching the game on Thursday that he was wild in the zone. I think he missed with a couple sliders here and there. But his line would look entirely different, I think, with some better defense. Lourdes Gurriel had a couple adventures out there. And then I think that was the Kevin Biggio's, you know, the low days of Kevin Biggio over there at third base. We'll be right back with more Spin Rate, but first, check this out. Here's a question that I was contemplating. This is a bit of a jump. We're kind of jumping, but I think this is a natural thing. One of the things I wanted to bring up was that the StatCast, the Baseball Savant, their infield defensive numbers were updated for the first time, or made public for the first time this season. And right now, as of right now, they have Kevin Biggio as minus three runs below average, three outs below average at third base as a third baseman. The question I have for you, Caitlin, and everyone out there, and I kind of put it to a friend last night as well, but like, are the Blue Jays worse with Vlad Guerrero Jr. playing third base right now? Like, are they a worse team with Vlad at third than they are with Kevin Biggio or Joe Panic? Or to a lesser extent, Santiago Espinal, who did a great job defensively playing third base, but of course can't hit at all. So do you think, Caitlin McGrath, that the Blue Jays are worse with Vlad at third than they are with anybody else over there?
I don't think that they would be worse. Mm-hmm. And I would have to sort of go back and look at Vlad's numbers. I mean, if we're talking about outs above average, I mean, when Vlad was playing third full time in 2019, he was the worst ranked third baseman mm-hmm. based on outs above mm-hmm. average. So I'm going to maybe disagree with you. I don't know actually if you want to move him or not, but I'm going to say leave Vlad at first base. Mm-hmm. So if I am Vlad right now, I am off to a great start. I am comfortable. I am finally feeling comfortable in the major leagues. I am mm-hmm. hitting the best I've ever hit. I'm playing pretty good defense at first base. I'm still mm-hmm. learning the position, but I'm feeling confident. I do not want to change a thing. Like, that would be me. And I mm-hmm. don't know if Vlad is that into his routines, and is that, you know, like, there are some players that are very superstitious, and if you were, say, a superstitious player and things were working for you, you may not want to switch things up and move. I think he could play third base. I just think if you're the Blue Jays and you're the coaching staff, you've seen how Vlad's been playing, don't change it. Let him do what he's been doing.
I don't disagree, except that the counterpoint to that, I would say, is he was the DH not just in the second game of the doubleheader on Saturday, but then again on Sunday. He was the DH two games in a row, which I found a little bit surprising. And I don't know if there's something else to that. If I had to guess why Vlad was DHing, I think it was because Charlie Montoyo thinks that maybe Rowdy Tellez maybe his bat will come around a little bit with the opportunity to play first base. That's my guess. I'm thinking that if I'm the manager and I'm the kind of guy that believes this kind of stuff, I think I'm going to get Rowdy going by putting him at first base. Right now, Vlad is in the groove at the plate. Nothing's going to stop that. Rest, if he's playing the field, if he's not playing the field, you know, he looks like, well, as we've all talked about 1,000 times, like he looks right now like one of the 10 best hitters in the game. Rowdy Tellez is not. They put Rowdy in 2 games in a row. Again, second game of the doubleheader and then again on Sunday. I don't think that they are a worse team with Vlad playing third base. While Vlad Jr. playing third base in 2019 was the worst in big leagues, that's true. He's a different guy now. He's a completely different guy. There's a great story in The Star this weekend about kind of an in-depth interview with the trainer, whose name I don't have in front of me, who worked with Vlad all winter and did all the work about talking about the tightness in Vlad's hips and ankles, really working hard to get Vlad to be a lot more flexible, a lot more physical. And now you see him out there doing the splits and all that sort of stuff. So 2019 Vlad is not 2021 Vlad. But as luck would have it, Kevin Biggio currently ranks as the worst third baseman in baseball, according to outs above right. average. So they're not losing anything. Look, when you watch the games over the weekend, the Blue Jays really, really, really struggled to score. They won those games against the Yankees. The Yankees are not in a good place right now. Their pitching is quite bad. Their offense is terrible. It's delightful. But the one game they won, basically, you know, just in the power of Bo Bichette hitting 2 opposite field home runs. And over the weekend, other than Vladimir Guerrero Jr., they didn't score a lot. And then in particular on Sunday, they looked awful. And then when you look at the lineup, you realize that there are a lot of guys that aren't quite big league caliber hitters in the lineup because of the injuries. When your lineup goes, you know, when Kirk is hitting 6, then you've got Jonathan Davis, Josh Palacios, you've got Joe Panic in there. Like, none of those guys can hit, right? Josh Palacios is a delightful story, but I am not convinced that he's a big league hitter. I don't think that he looks the part personally. I would love to be proven wrong. He had 4 hits on Saturday that are really like floating the boat right now in terms of his numbers. Thursday? I don't know. He had 4 hits one day. And, it might have been against the Yankees. Whenever it was, he got 4 hits.
Wasn't
and it's
it,
like
The Angels.
Oh, the Angels. Yeah. So
right when he came up.
Yeah. So he's got four hits and those are kind of like he's eating out on those still. And he had a bunt single, which was cool. I love that. But that's a lot of like holes in the lineup. And then Biggio, of course, is who's if you watch him, he looks worse than his numbers are. You know, he's still a ton of walks for whatever reason, and he's got a couple of home runs. So he's closer to league average than I think if you were just given it the eyeball test, you would believe. But they need to score runs. And I don't know if it's Gurriel or whoever is back, like there needs to be an emphasis on scoring some more runs.
How does this get back to Vlad at third base?
Because if you move Vlad to third base, then you don't have to worry about running panic out there. Maybe you can then move Biggio to the outfield. Then you could play one of Jonathan Davis or Josh Palacios, and then if you've got Kirk at DH, if you've got Tellez at first base, you could I'm not sure what happened to Gurriel if he's just had a day off today or on mm-hmm. Sunday, but. But like he starting to look like he's coming around a little bit, doing the Gurriel thing, like dragging a couple singles through holes and things like that, where you tend to think maybe he could be kind of putting it together a little bit. But I think that you need to make you aren't losing anything by trying to figure out how else you can score. Because I don't know that because they can't score right now, because they haven't looked the part, because even though there are players who are underperforming, some of the players are we don't know even what their floor is, right? Joe Panic was like 85 weighted runs created plus or something last year, like a significantly below average hitter, right? Jonathan Davis, you heard me on this podcast going, I gotta go, he goes out and steals somebody's job. And he has not looked like that quite yet. Again, I'm being a bummer on Palacios, but I don't know. I just love to see them score more.
Well, that problem might solve itself soon, because I think we only have a few more games to go before we're going to get some offense injected, or potential offense, I should say, injected into the lineup. Because I think George Springer and I think Teoscar Hernandez are pretty close to coming back. Now, Teoscar has to finish the COVID-19 isolation period, which is 10 days, I believe. And so I think he has to stay into isolation until like potentially might be the 22nd, I think, would be 10 days, which would be right ahead of the next weekend series against Tampa. And I also think the Blue Jays are targeting that Tampa series for George Springer's return, because yes, it's still a road trip, but obviously he's been in Dunedin. So it's a really close trip, obviously, for him to just meet the team and in Tampa. And then it's also not necessarily flying him out far. If he can't make the Friday game, maybe he comes back on the Saturday game or whatever it may be, right?
And it's indoors too. It's not out braving the elements in Boston for whatever that might be.
Yeah, also a good point. So the offense, yes, it has to obviously get better. It's been weird. I mean, you've seen all these guys kind of on these kind of streaky patterns to start. You mentioned like Lourdes was like that. I mean, Rowdy obviously got off to a really slow start. Now he's sort of stringing some hits together. I think you made a good point about maybe them wanting to keep him in the lineup and keep him at first base to sort of, I don't know, boost the ego, reward him for getting a few hits and whatever it may be. You know, and also just to go back to the Vlad thing, I mean, they mentioned the potential for Vlad to play at third base. Like when we heard that Biggio had injured his hand, obviously it's not a serious thing, just a day-to-day thing. The options on the table included Vlad could play third base. And then they didn't do it, obviously. They didn't play him at third base in any of those games. I wonder if it's to do with the fact that they don't want to disrupt whatever's working with him. It'll be interesting to see what happens in Boston if Biggio's still out, and they could potentially put Vlad at third if they don't again. Kind of suggests to me that they're really not in a rush to play him at third base. They kind of want to keep saying it's on the table and keep saying it's an option. But I don't know.
Can we talk about poor Kevin Biggio?
You have more points to make about Biggio?
My guy had a rough weekend, and I just don't know what it means. If it means anything, if there is anything to be taken from that. Are we going to see them continue to run him out there at third base? So in addition to maybe some early season question marks about his arm, you know, he really had some tough misplays. The one he took it off the finger kind of went through his glove, and then he came in as a pinch runner and got thrown out, and he's just like, it's been a tough weekend. And again, he's not like unplayable, obviously, at any position. And in some ways his blessing is a curse too. His ability to play a bunch of positions, means that he can put himself into places where he might be in a, you know, his weaknesses get exposed. And that's kind of happened at third base a little bit. I think, I don't know if I've overstated his ability or his struggles at third base, but I don't think that it's time to like get to start suggesting that he's out of job or anything like that quite yet. But I just, he had a rough weekend, and I think that it's if nothing else, it's worth at least acknowledging that it was a rough weekend. And then he definitely, you know, if his fingers are still bothering him, didn't really play Saturday and then didn't play again on Sunday. So it's tough, you know, and one thing that it does do when you have those situations, when you have such a short bench as the Blue Jays do, that if a guy is just not available and has the day off, there's nothing left. There's nobody left on the bench. At one point Saturday, they're double switching and they're double switching Danny Jansen in and Espinal and whatever else. It's it really puts them into it. It paints them into a corner. A, because they need so many pitchers on the staff because they have got so many injuries and then nobody's really like a real innings pig. And then B, when things are struggling, there's not a lot of levers for Charlie Montoya to pull. There's only so many guys you can turn to and say, hey, can you help us out here? Because with one of them's down, you're kind of out of luck.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the case in the bullpen right now, too. I mean, there was a couple of days there where David Phelps, if you remember, I want to say it was the Tuesday game, where actually a lot went wrong in that Tuesday game, if you remember. Like, Julian Merriweather didn't look right. Obviously comes out that he was injured. After Jordan Romano didn't look right, 2 days or 3 days later, it comes out that he's injured. David Phelps took a rocket to the back from, I think, Clint Fraser, and he was day-to-day. And so there was a point where David Phelps was day-to-day because he's just got this contusion, right? So it's not necessarily an IL stint kind of injury, but the more you just say he's day-to-day, you can't call someone else up and he can't go. And so it's like having, you know, the Blue Jays always want to have as many pitchers as available as possible in their bullpen. They're always a team that's going to have like 8 or 9 or 10 guys in their bullpen. And to have one guy not available, it was hurting them. Like now he can pitch, so it's fine. But,
So you've done my work for me here, and you brought us to the thing that I was worried. I didn't want us to end up spending too much time talking about, but what?
I was going to say, I've been practicing my segues to be as good as you.
Well, look, it's not my first time. It takes time to get to be, as corny as I am, to live and breathe like an entire cob of corn. But Charlie Montoya made some really strange choices on Sunday. So we talked about a little bit off the top. We talked about Robbie Ray's wild start. But in the end, there he was, 5-5, 0 runs allowed. Blue Jays in a scoreless tie. Not a bad place to be. Tim Mayza gets the call, comes in, did the job, did the thing. Okay, here we go. Seventh inning, bottom of the seventh. Seventh inning stretch is over. Got a clean slate. Got the heart of the Royals order coming up in a tie game. And you are Charlie Montoya, and you say, "Bring me TJ Zoik," which was an odd choice. TJ Zoik has utility as a big leaguer. I think he showed that utility in some of those outings he's made against the Yankees so far, where it's like just sort of survive. Maybe Aaron Judd hits one 480 feet. It's fine. Don't unclutter the bases. You know, you pitch in a lower leverage situation. Maybe you're pitching the third to the fifth or the fourth to the sixth inning or something like that. I found that a very strange time to go to TJ Zoik. And I would love to know maybe if this was something that people were asking Charlie about in the post game, because you mentioned you were there, because then he proceeded to get absolutely rocked for probably 4 pitches in a row. It was just like laser, 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 laser. Gives up a bullet to Carlos Santana, and then he gives up a bomb to Salvador Perez. And then Jorge Soler hits another bullet. Like, I swear, this was four pitches apart. And then he sort of calmed him down and he sort of got out of it. Well, he didn't get out of it. They called on Tanner Roark to come in and shut the door. And God, it worked, but I don't know. Why don't you tell me, was there any insight from Charlie Montoyo in the postgame in terms of why he went to these guys? What was wrong with Ryan Baraki? What was wrong with David Phelps? Was there anything that you can remember that came out of these kinds of conversations?
I don't think it came up.
What? What the fuck are you people doing on these stupid Zoom calls?
I'm joking. I am, you know, today I was working on a story that is going to be up in the morning, and it has nothing to do with these games. Well, I mean, tangential. It's linked
these,
to the
these stupid games that these men play. I don't care about that. I mean, here to tell stories.
It's about a player that was in the game, and it's certainly about the Blue Jays, but it wasn't that game focused. So I was on the Zoom call, mm-hmm. and I don't think it came up. We talked about Ray and my gosh, I think the answer would be, I don't know if there was anyone else available. Maybe like it was even weird to see Zoik in the bullpen. I didn't even know that he was in the bullpen. Like that was, I mean, he was only starting a handful of days ago. And if I had to guess, it would be that they may have been saving Phelps for later because they really don't have a closer at all. So if they were to take a lead at any point, they would have needed an arm like his to be in the ninth inning. But that's just me guessing because he was definitely like up and walking around. And I don't know. I mean, Baraki probably can go 2 days in a row, right? Like he pitched. That would be, did he pitch on?
He faced three batters on Saturday.
Yeah. So that would be the other question that if I had been realizing that this was going to come up on the pod that I would have asked Charlie.
He threw nine pitches on Saturday, faced three batters.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, now I'm tempted to go listen back to the Zoom and see if he said anything, but I have a pretty good memory and I don't remember this really coming up.
It's fair. And I tease obviously, and maybe I probably wouldn't have asked that question as well, unless I had a column to write, which is the whole construct that we're working with in a lot of ways here. It was a very puzzling choice in a way. I don't think TJ Zoik would be the worst. Well, maybe not. I think the fact that Robbie Ray was facing the Royals worked in his advantage. The Royals are pretty good. They've got some pretty good players. Obviously, Salvador Perez had a great weekend, hit that huge home run on Sunday, hit the walk-off home run on Saturday. Salvador Perez is among the more likable players in the entire game. He's great. He's huge. He seems to have a good time. Everybody seems to love him. I think he could end up finishing his career as a member of the Royals, which is awesome. He's a good player. He'll swing at fucking anything. Anything. So when when TJ Zoik throws him like a thigh-high sinker on the inside half, first pitch, oh, just I don't begrudge the idea of bringing him in. And I think that the Royals that are pretty free-swinging team, other than Carlos Santana, you can help let the Royals get themselves out in a ways. There's a lot of guys on that team that are like not super great hitters. But Zoik just could not locate anything. And he left through that brutal pitch to Perez. What I was thinking was in some ways it might have been worked to Ray's advantage that he was playing the Royals because they could help him when he wasn't able to throw anything over the plate. And then the choice to go to Roark in a high leverage situation with men on base. Here's this guy who, again, his value is as an innings eater. His value is getting you innings he's going to go out there, maybe get his brains beat in a little bit. But man, just a odd choice. And you can't manage every game like it's the seventh game of the World Series. But I think a 0-0, like a scoreless game, you sneak out of there with a split. Maybe that's a game to put the foot on the accelerator a little bit. If I'm Monday morning quarterbacking, that might be my perspective on that.
You know, Tanner Roark has a 0 ERA as a reliever.
It's hard to argue with that. So. It's hard to argue. if he can come in there and be like a real change of pace out of the bullpen, almost like a little knuckleballer, that could be all right.
Like a Tommy Malone. Look at how he was throwing the other day.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the bullpen, the stat when it's up on the board during the game today. The Blue Jays have the best bullpen ERA in the game.
Which is wild. Yeah, it's wild. It's wild. And actually, like, it's getting, I remember looking that up a few days ago because I mentioned it in something that I wrote. And at that point, they were the third best. It was all very close, though, at the top, right? I think the Yankees were still one of the better bullpens. And obviously, they had a bad series this weekend. I can't remember who is else up there. Cleveland? I don't know. I can't remember. But the Blue Jays bullpen has been really good and, like, under the radar good because there's been a lot of guys that have been injured. Like, think of who we thought were going to be the top arms, like Romano. Obviously, his injury just happened this past week. But even before that, he kind of looked shaky. He didn't quite look totally himself. Julian Merriweather was obviously the star of the first week of the season, and he's probably going to be out for a while. And Chatwood was supposed to be like another guy that's supposed to like hold things down for you. But then you've got really good performances like Ryan Barucki. I mean, he has completely transformed himself into an elite reliever. I mean, maybe it's a little, I guess, more sample size here, but everything that he showed last year, other than like last year, his only issue was walking too many guys. And I haven't looked up his stats, but just anecdotally, I don't remember him walking very many guys this year. He's thrown the ball better. He's thrown a lot more strikes. Tim Meza's bit looked really good, done exactly what you needed Tim Meza to do. David Phelps has looked good this year. Obviously getting hit in the back wasn't really his fault. But he seems to be fine from that. And then some of the waiver wire guys, Joel Piamps and, Anthony Castro, they looked really good as well. So the Blue Jays, I mean, look, I will criticize the team when I need to, but I think the Blue Jays in the time that I've covered them, they've actually usually put together a pretty decent bullpen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. I think that when you look at the way that some of these guys have pitched, you know, even though Jordan Romano had when he was hurt, he didn't look like himself, but he kind of got out of there without any real damage. Same with Julian Merriweather, right? Merriweather came in, he pitched twice against the Yankees, was unhittable, pitched it really well against somebody else, came in, was like only a little okay. Like he obviously didn't look like himself, wasn't quite throwing as hard, but still kind of got away without allowing, didn't allow any runs. Tim Mazes looked good in the times that he's been out there. David Phelps, same sort of thing. Like, guys who have, and Trent Thornton has looked good throwing more innings than a lot of those guys. Even Dolis, right? Dolis was bad on Saturday. It was awful to watch him. He looked really, really, it was everything bad about Rafael Dolis. He was walking the ballpark, had no clue where he was going, but then he got that really key double play, the Santiago Espinal tag third and then threw to second to get a force when the bases were loaded, or first and second, whatever the situation was. First and second, and really big double play that kind of bailed Dolis out. So he's looked bad, but the numbers haven't been bad, and that helps, right? If you're trying to figure out why your how it is that your bullpen is leading the league in ERA when they have been through a lot of guys and there have been a few rough outings, and again, as a reliever, TJ Zoik's numbers are like really, really, really bad, but. At the same time, you can't help but apply what they've got. And then if the news on Romano was pretty good, the news on, what was it?
Hatch Chatwood.
Chatwood is pretty good. Yeah, you're right. Thank you. That's good. So they got guys on the way back. So it's always going to be a thing. They're going to run through a lot of these guys. All these guys are going to get run at different times in the season. So it's good to see them pitching well. Obviously, some questionable choices in a game that looked winnable, other than the fact the Blue Jays couldn't hit, and the Royals have some pretty good relievers back there. Even though I can't believe that Greg Holland is making it work. I mean, I get it when it was 97 and he was doing that weird like step over to first base thing, but at 92, 93, 94, it's a little surprising that it works. But the Blue Jays aren't putting up a lot of resistance to opposing pitchers right now. More Spin Rate coming up right after these words from our sponsors. So, Caitlin, the week coming up, as we kind of touched on, an off day, the first real off day of the season.
Finally.
After two rainouts. And then they go to Boston, and then they go to Tampa Bay. after another off day.
It's a weird week. It's actually two weird weeks. Like, I don't know why the MLB scheduled it this way. They jam-packed the Blue Jays' first stretch there with, like, 16 games. And then there's two off days each week in the next 2 weeks. So there's four off days in the next 2 weeks, which is a lot in baseball.
Mm-hmm. And the following week, actually, is when they start some of the interleague play. So I believe they play Washington. Mm-hmm. And then they play Atlanta. So that'll be interesting to test themselves against against some National League sides at home, though, so they won't lose the DH. So we won't have to worry about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. playing third base quite yet. Not worry, but look forward to, depending on your perspective. And as you said, you've got a story coming up about a player who was in tangentially involved in the pajama games that the men were playing. What else? Anything else that I know you don't like to be put on the spot, but is there anything that you'd like to talk or anything you'd like to offer? You got a chat coming up this week?
No, I don't have a chat coming up this week. The story on Monday, I mean, people will be listening to this, so it'll be out. Hmm. It's about Vlad.
Oh, that's exciting. So, he's good.
Yeah. And the stuff that's coming later in the week, I will, have my weekly column out. It'll be coming out a day later, though, because of the off day and the Blue Jays sort of playing week starting on Tuesday, then we'll go from there. I don't know. Like, maybe if Springer makes his way back, I'll have a Springer piece. We'll have to wait. That's sort of in wait and see mode for me. But I'm actually looking forward to the Blue Jays playing Boston because I'm very, very curious to watch this Boston team that is, like, currently running away with the American League East, which is kind of wild.
They did lose two games on Sunday. Which is a shame, I guess, but they do look pretty good. They've got one of the top offenses in baseball, which I don't think anybody would be surprised to learn. Alex Verdugo's is swinging a good bat. Is that true? These are last year's numbers. What on earth am I looking at? Anyway, they got good players. I'm like, man, this guy's already worth two wins. No, JD Martinez is swinging out of his mind, and Bogarts, and Devers, and Christian Arroyo. Crazy. Babyface Christian Arroyo, former Giants top prospect, is putting some hits together. But it'll be interesting to see what happens with the rotation. I know that Nate Eovaldi went today against what's his name, the guy with the Giolito. So there's maybe you'll get it. I know the Blue Jays get Eduardo Rodriguez and then Garrett Richards because the Red Sox have to play Monday, the Patriots Day game. So here comes the pizza. The greatest moment in American sporting history, which I believe was 20. Oh my God, it wasn't that long ago. 19 years. Whatever. The great moment, the great Here Comes the Pizza incident of Patriots Day. JD Drew. Do you remember? Are you familiar with the Here Comes the Pizza?
No.
Oh my God, are you joking? It's the best. I don't even need to describe it here, other than Jerry Remy and Don Arcillo calling. It's a miserable day. So the Red Sox play at 11:30 in the morning, of the Boston Marathon. So there's a guy goes over to the fly ball goes over to shallow left field. Somebody's like trying to catch the ball. Garrett Anderson is the left fielder for the Angels. It's so long ago it was. Guy kind of gets in the way, says something to Garrett Anderson for whatever reason. Guy takes a full piece of pizza and throws it at another fan, hits him in the back, and then Don Arcillo, so then Jerry Remy, they come back from commercial. Jerry Remy does like a telestrator bit on like as they tried to figure out like where the pizza came from. And Don Arcillo was crying. He's laughing so hard at this whole sequence of events where like the guy gets hit with pizza and then they're laughing and then he realizes he got hit with pizza. Then it's like full mass hole breakout where these two guys from Boston are going to fight in the stands because one of them threw a piece of pizza at another. It's truly the greatest sports highlight I've ever seen in my life. It's the funniest thing. I watch it every single year and it makes me laugh every single time. I've seen it so many times. But if you're the Blue Jays, you're coming into Boston with them having played two games on Sunday and then an 11:30 game on Monday. No rest for them. The Blue Jays finally get their off day after having a rain out on Friday. So maybe the odds might fall a little bit more in the Blue Jays' favor as they try to string some runs together. And
they have Hyunjin Ryu going on Tuesday.
And fingers crossed Anthony Kay going on Wednesday. And then they play the cursed Rays on the weekend, which I guess we'll probably see more left-handed guys between Steven Matz and Robbie Ray, whoever else
is
out there.
The whole Blue Jays rotation is left-handed at this point, if you're including Kay.
The whole batting lineup is right-handed. Did the Atkins and Shapiro think that they were going to play against each other? Was this whole season happening at the alternate site? I don't know. But if you want to hear all that, another thing, Caitlin, you wrote this week was that This Week in Baseball Pictures, didn't you? You were on that duty this week. If you want to read that, if you want to read her story on Vlad, if you want to read all of the columns, if you want to read about the Red Sox, if you want to read about the Yankees, misery, Lindsay Adler's the your
she's the top misery
columnist. No one will be better to channel that misery and find out why Yankees fans are melting down today. You want to go to theathletic.com/spinrate and subscribe to The Athletic if you haven't already. Let them know that we sent you. Help us out. Let us keep going, living in the style to which we have grown accustomed here. So subscribe to The Athletic if you haven't, and subscribe to the podcast. Subscribe to Spin Rate. Caitlin and I do this every Sunday night where we get together and we talk about the week that was and the week that's coming up. If you heard this last week, I spoke to Ben Nicholson-Smith from Sportsnet. He and I had a great chat. He's a real pro. Good to talk to him. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, Stitcher, Overcast, wherever. Give us a rating. Give us a thumbs up. Give us a like. Tell us, tell the people, the other people, what they might like. What they might get if they listen to this show. We'd really appreciate it. I know that I do. Caitlin, I appreciate you. I appreciate you taking the time away from writing your Vlad column. Did you already file? Are you done?
Oh, it's done.
Bless. So you're free and clear.
This podcast actually helps me file early on Sundays, which is good because then I can enjoy a few hours on my Sunday night to unwind. And luckily, I'll have an off day tomorrow. I mean, I'll still be working and I'm going to be writing, but it's not a huge amount of writing tomorrow because I already have most of it planned out. So anyway, read my Vlad story today. It's up.
I'm excited to read your Vlad story. Maybe I'll link to it in my Vlad newsletter that I write sometimes. It's been more often. Am I going to try and write one tonight? Oh boy, I don't want to commit to that, but we'll see. But if you read Caitlin's Vlad story, you can subscribe to my newsletter at fairservice.substack.com. All about Vlad all the time. So for Caitlin, my name is Drew. And for Caitlin and Drew and producer Cam, of course, we need to send a shout out to Cam because we don't do that often enough. This has been Spin Rate. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you next time.